We do appreciate your prayerful giving. I assure you it will be used for the upbuilding of God's kingdom. I need to acknowledge a couple of things, just how wonderful the church looks, the decorations. I know Raynita was behind that, and I'm sure she had several volunteers, and so we just want to thank you for that. Thank you so much for making the sanctuary look so nice. Okay. Thank you, everyone. We really appreciate it. Isn't it beautiful? It's really nice. We always talk about Santa Claus coming to town at Christmas time, but I like to think about when the truth came to town, because Jesus says He is the truth. I want to share with you a verse of Scripture, and before I do that, I want to just give you a little background, because we know it. Let's just review together. The wise men come, and they are seeking this king. They've seen his star in the east, it says, and they have come to worship him. And they come to Jerusalem, because Bethlehem's not very far from Jerusalem, and so they end up following the star, and they go to Jerusalem, and they start to inquire around town. Where is the one that was born king of the Jews? We've seen his star in the east, and we've come to worship him. And then, this is in Matthew, and if you have your Bible, you can look with me in Matthew. Then we have this verse that a lot of times we just read right through it. Just read right over it. I want you to look at it with me. Matthew 2, verse 3. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Now, a lot of times we can look at that and figure out why King Herod was troubled. Because he saw Jesus as a threat, I'm sure. I mean, if you are king, or if you are leader, or have been leader, you don't really like to hear about someone else who might take your place while you're still on the throne or in command or in control. It's not you kind of get paranoid about this person that's on the scene. It's sort of like you get afraid when you're in a leadership position that there may be some rumblings and somebody else might be going to take over, and they're starting to win the people, and that can be frightening. Sometimes that happens no matter what you do, whether you're in pastoral work, whether you're in just secular work, it doesn't matter. It seems like you just get a little paranoid. I hear about this other person who might take control. So we understand a little bit about why Herod was concerned, but I've always been puzzled by that last phrase, and all Jerusalem with him. I mean, when I think about the day they were being pretty much, they weren't slaves, but they were certainly being mistreated by the Romans that were in power. And they had been praying for God to send the deliverer, to send the Messiah, to send the one that would help them to overthrow the Roman rule, they thought. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, well, when they hear that there's a king born and that the humming's going through the city streets there, why would they be disturbed? Well, I think it's because it doesn't necessarily mean the common man. I think it means some of those who were his buddies, Herod's buddies. But I think it can also mean those who were afraid to face the truth. I'm not going to concern myself so much with the Romans today who were in control. We're going to talk about Herod, and we're going to talk about the Jews because those were God's people, and we're going to discuss why they might have been disturbed and troubled. I want to show you a picture of a film, the little one sheet of To Catch a Thief. Now, most of you probably have seen this film. If you hadn't, you've seen part of it. You know who Cary Grant, Grace Kelly are. They're long gone, but it was a Hitchcock movie. It wasn't one of his best, but the reason I brought this up is because the film itself is about a guy played by Cary Grant who used to steal for the French Resistance during World War II. And he went to jail later on because evidently he was a cat burglar and he stole a bunch of jewelry. Well, he gets released from prison and there's somebody else that starts stealing jewelry in the vicinity where Cary Grant is living, and the police think it's Cary Grant. And so they're constantly trying to catch Cary Grant stealing. And during the movie, you're convinced it's not Cary Grant, and he's trying to figure out a way to stop whoever it is so that it can clear his name. Well, finally, the only reason I bring up any of this stuff is the last scene of the movie, Cary Grant decides to get up on the roof and catch the cat burglar himself. And he does it. But it's real confusion going on, and the police are there, and they're shining lights up on the roof and everything, and they see Cary Grant in his black outfit, and so he looks guilty, you know, and there he is, he's right in the spotlight. But then all of a sudden, he manages to grab the cat burglar, and the cat burglar is dangling off the side of the roof, about to fall off, and Cary Grant says, "Now, this is the scene where we tell everyone what's what and who is really who." In other words, it's time for everything to come clean. It's time for the truth to be known. No longer is there going to be the illusion. So we think about what's going on in Jerusalem. Why would these people be troubled? Messiah is coming. That should be good news for everyone. Think about it today. If you thought Messiah is coming back this December 25th, wouldn't you think, hey, that's good news. We should all celebrate. But before you answer, let's think about that for just a second. Are there some things in your life, are there some things on your heart or in your mind that you really want Messiah to reveal? Are there some things going on around you, in your family, in your workplace? Are there some things you're actively involved in that, you know, you might not want all the truth to be told? I want to look at some verses here. Very intriguing. Look at what it says about the Lord in Daniel. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with Him. Psalm 44. He knows the secrets of the heart. I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doing. Basically, these scriptures are saying, listen, God knows everything about you. He knows your deepest secret. He knows the things you'll only share with a few people. He knows the things you'll share with no one. He knows what you think about when you go to bed at night. He knows what you do when you think your time is your own and nobody's around to watch you. He is aware of everything. Herod is troubled. Let's start by talking about Herod. Herod is troubled. I want you to look at the next slide. Now, we know that God made a covenant with Abraham. You're going to be my people. You're going to have people to, you're going to have offspring as much as the sand is on the shore. And you're going to be a great nation, and everybody's going to be blessed by you. He ordains Abraham as the father of his chosen people, the Jews. Abraham is the first patriarch. Patriarch means he is promised the blessing. He is the patriarch. Well, then Abraham has some children. He has Ishmael and he has Isaac. Now, he kind of forced God's hand because he didn't think God was going to deliver as quick as he thought he should. So, you know, his wife says, take my handmaiden, have a child, and he has Ishmael. But God says, no, it's not going to be done that way. I promised you I'm going to give you a child with Sarah. And so that child is Isaac. And God blesses Isaac. He makes Ishmael. He gives him land, and he says, I'll take care of Ishmael. I'm going to make sure he prospers. But it's Isaac that I'm going to keep as my patriarch, and he's going to fulfill the blessing, he and his offspring. Well, Isaac has two children, Esau and Jacob. And we know the story of Esau and Jacob because Isaac kind of favored Esau and the mom kind of favored Jacob a little bit. Esau was the hunter. Jacob was kind of mama's boy. You know how it is. Esau and Jacob fools the father into making the blessing. And you remember that story from Sunday school and so forth and so on. So God favored Jacob. And he told Isaac at the beginning that Jacob was going to be the one to fulfill his call. It was going to be Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then we go down the line. We have Jacob changing his name to Israel. Israel has 12 children, the 12 tribes of Israel, 12 children, etc., etc. We know Joseph and so forth. But I want to focus on this right here, and I don't have enough time to go into all of this, but it's important you understand that these are three of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the ones God was going to fulfill His promise through. This was going to be the foundation of Israel, the children of Israel. Not these guys, not Ishmael, and not Esau. Now, to make a long story short, Esau, he was still blessed, even though he was not the fulfilled, he was not the promised person that got the fulfillment of the promised land, etc. He still was blessed by God, and he established a homeland in Idumea. Herod was from Idumea. He was a descendant of Esau. He wasn't a descendant of Jacob. Therefore, Herod knew enough about the scriptures and knew enough to realize he wasn't supposed to be king. So, Herod is on the throne, supposedly king of the Jews, and he finds out Messiah is coming. And Messiah, if he knows the scriptures, and those are Old Testament scriptures I just gave you, and he does know because he knows, he calls in his scholars of the Word of God, and he finds out where this child's supposed to be born, and they tell him in Bethlehem. So he's surrounded with Jewish scholars. He knows enough to know God searches the heart. God knows what's real. God knows what's true. There is no darkness in him. He is all light, and he's going to reveal the truth. He knows everything. He knows the deepest recesses of our very souls. And Herod is frightened. Why? Because he's on a throne he's not supposed to occupy. And when the truth comes to town, it's all going to be revealed. We take that, we manifest that same reality to today's world. And I want to ask you today, if Jesus Christ were coming, if you heard it going through the highways and the byways today, that Messiah is here, Messiah is coming, the handwriting's on the wall, he's about to come into his gates, he's about to arrive, he's about to rapture his church, or he's about to judge the nations. I want to ask you today, does that give you comfort or does that trouble you? You say, well, there's some things I need to get taken care of before he gets here. Yeah, there are, friend, because I'm going to tell you something. We're not only in the last days, I believe we're in the last seconds. And he knows the truth. He knows it all. So Herod is troubled. He's not entitled to rule. He's not entitled to lead, and he knows this. But it's not just Herod. You ever heard the phrase, the gig is up or the jig is up? That's what's going on right now. The jig is up. Herod's fooled the people, and he's gotten in good with the Romans as this sort of puppet ruler, and he's established himself as someone, sort of built a reputation. As I said before, he surrounded himself with the like-minded. Isn't that the way it is? Somebody goes into power, and what do? They fire everybody else, and they get people just like them, right? That's what we do, because why? We don't want any of them to sort of push us out of office or push us out of leadership. Just get people around you who see it in like mind. See it the way that you see it. And that's what Herod does. He's had some time there. He said yes. He was a yes man to all the Romans. And sure enough, I'm sure he started to fill his little puppet cabinet with other little puppets that thought just like him. So he's got some other people that are surrounding him. He's feeling pretty good. It's funny, you know. There's sort of this separation between royalty and the common man, and I'm sure he's enjoying that, and he's kind of keeping people where they are. He doesn't have any problem parading around in his finest, because the people, as misguided as they can be sometimes, the people still see him as some sort of a voice for them in the Roman world. For some reason or another, I think they believe he'll still protect Jewish interests, even though he's not interested in them at all. He's only interested in Herod. But he wants to maintain. He wants to keep it the way it is. He likes status quo. So what has he got to do? He's got to stop this king from coming. I got to do something about this. And as I told the children today, the original Grinch. But it's not just him acting on his own. I'm sure there wasn't a whole lot of people that came along and said, well, now wait a minute, Herod. This would be a great thing. You know, we've been all just waiting for this Messiah to come. Can you imagine the chaos if Messiah comes and if he's the kind of a guy that the Jews are expecting, a great warrior to overthrow the Romans? Don't you know Herod and his cabinet are going to be the first to be, you know, kind of ousted? Don't you know the Romans are going to put them to death first? I mean, after all, it's a Jew getting ready to take on the Romans. That's what they're seeing. Herod thinks he's in serious trouble here. So not only do I need to get rid of him because I'm not supposed to be the king in the first place, but one of the first people that's going to go is going to be me. And then he turns around to his cabinet and says, and once they come after me, they're going to come after you. So I got a feeling there weren't a whole lot of guys speaking up and say, hey, Herod, this sounds like a great idea. Let's just let him come on in here. I'm sure that there were a lot of yes men sitting around Herod saying, yeah, we got to do something to get rid of this guy, Herod. I don't think Herod acted alone. You know, we've been talking about the Kennedy assassination here recently. I don't think it was just Herod that said, yes, let's just do it. Let's just get rid of him. I'm sure there were several others that encouraged him to do it as well, because that's human nature. Let's get rid of this baby. So he sends them out. They kill all those people in Bethlehem. Why? Because I'm afraid I'm going to be found out. I got to stop it at any cost. I talked about the movie To Catch a Thief. I got another picture up here. I'll show you another film. High Noon. I like High Noon. Everybody likes High Noon. Doesn't matter because it's funny. If you're a conservative, you like it because it's a cowboy fighting the bad guys who get out before their time that didn't get their just penalty. And if you're a liberal, you like it because you think it's against the McCarthy administration whenever they had people to come up there. They found they think that it had something to do with Gary Cooper standing up in the face of McCarthyism in the day it was shot. I have no idea. I think it's a pretty good Western. I couldn't care less about the political statement. But I do think that one interesting thing about it is, if you watch High Noon, if you know anything about the story, Gary Cooper is just by himself. He's alone. And there's four guys that he put away that are getting out of jail, getting out of prison, and they're going to come and they're going to kill him. And they've been telling him all this time they're going to come back and they're going to kill him. And so Gary Cooper goes around and he tries to get a posse together, and nobody will help him. He goes everywhere. Nobody will help him. You know, it's kind of like a preacher trying to get somebody to work in a church. Oh. Nobody will help. And so he ends up having to do it all on his own. But the reason I bring up this movie is because it's these four guys have been in prison. They were out of sight. They were out of mind. It wasn't until they were released that Gary Cooper got serious about it. And he realized they were coming. See, I think sometimes we live in a day in which there's Black Friday, there's Thanksgiving, there's materialism, there's what we're going to do after church, there's what we're going to do next week, there's how we're going to get the family together at Christmas. There's so much going on. There's school, there's the job, there's the family. There's so much. And they're not bad things, they're good things. Sometimes I think we fail to recognize the reality that I don't know when Jesus is coming again, but I know He is coming again. And I don't mean to just keep on shoving it under the eyes of everyone and saying, hey, listen, keep this in the front of your plate. You know, keep this on the front. Don't put it in the back burner. But I've got to tell you something, that I think we've bought into this philosophy that we'll worry about it later when things look worse than they are right now. And I sit here and I look. You know, I went to a party last night, a birthday party for somebody that was at the church we used to pastor in Gold Hill, and just precious people. But we started to talk to some people there after the party, and, you know, they're having trouble in their church. I'll talk to my father, and he says, you know, it just seems like everybody has so much to do, so much going on. And I know that, and I'm not condemning that. I'm just simply saying that, you know, I don't know how things are going to get much worse than they are right now. I mean, I don't know what everybody's waiting on. Because, I mean, yeah, it's pretty stinking bad right now. If you don't believe me, come up and sit with me one night to Mag's office. I mean, it's bad. And I start thinking, what are we waiting on? So today, if I can leave you with one thought, I want to leave you with the fact that, you know, Satan loves to keep Jesus out of sight and out of mind. Gary Cooper didn't worry about these four guys as long as they were locked up in prison. And sometimes I think we don't worry about Jesus coming back until things seem to just hit us in such a marvelous and horrible way that it's as though we have tragedy in our life or we see something that's very disturbing. And the funny thing about the mind, the human mind, is that you ever notice when you see something disturbing after a week, it doesn't seem as disturbing? Or after a couple hours, you know, you don't mind thinking about it. It was really bad when it happened, but later on you start, you know, you come to grips with it. And I think for some reason Satan manipulates that in us, and he starts to make us think that, you know what, if we can just think about the routine day-to-day things, we'll just push Jesus away and out of sight, out of mind. We don't have to worry about making our lives right with Him. We don't have to worry about humbling ourselves before Him. We don't have to worry about the fact that one day everything's going to be revealed. And you say, well, I don't want everything to be revealed about me. Well, the only way I know for that not to happen is for you to confess and get right before the Lord and then anticipate His return. People were troubled. Why? Because the truth was coming to town. And I think this speaks to us today like it spoke to them in Jerusalem. Jesus wants His church to be without corruption. He wants to establish, he wants his church to establish him as its leader. And he's going to purge leaders which have no place in his church. He already is doing it. There's scandal that has rocked the church. Why? Because the truth comes to town and things are revealed about the hearts of the leaders in the churches. I'm not just talking about pastors, I'm talking about lay people as well. He wants his pastors, he wants his pulpit to be without blemish, but he also wants the leaders in the church, he wants his laity to be without blemish. He wants people that are going to take the message seriously, the kingdom seriously. He wants people that are going to really know what it means to be a Christian, to serve, to put him first above all things. And he's looking at us, and he knows what we're doing in his kingdom, and he knows what we're not doing in his kingdom. He knows how much you give thought to his kingdom. He knows how respectable we present ourselves as Christians. And sometimes I think, frankly, it sickens him.
I went to church with a guy one time, many years ago, before I ever went to ministry. Nice guy, I liked him a lot. Sold insurance. And I remember, I think Crystal and I were dating. We may have just gotten married, I don't remember. But anyway, I remember we were sitting in the pew one time, and I said, would you look up there at Harry? I said, you know what he's doing? Now, he's sitting in the choir loft. He's singing in the choir, okay? And he was sitting there doing this. I said, I don't want to think that he's doing this, but I'll bet you anything he's looking at all the people in the sanctuary wondering who he hasn't tried to sell insurance to yet. And you laugh at that, but you know what? I'm sure there's people in churches today that are doing it for social contacts. My accountant, well, my former accountant, he used to go to a small church in Salisbury. Now he goes to a very big church in Salisbury. Probably pretty good for business. More contacts. You know, we've got a reputation. People expect us to be in the church. It's what good people do. It's what community people do. What if he came right now? Does that thought seem troubling to you? Is there something that's going to be found out about you? We've shared about the four blood moons, and we've talked about the four blood moons and the reality that something's getting ready to happen in Israel and so forth. I've talked to some, I have felt so impressed in my heart, just like I was to you, to share some of that information with you. And I'll go to the job, there's some officers I know that are devout Christians. I'll talk to them about it, and some of them just, wow, Mark, thanks so much for sharing that with me. I had no idea. But I was talking to one guy the other day, and he said, you know what, I don't want to talk about this anymore. So let's don't talk about this. Let's talk about something else. Isn't it funny? I mean, there's a side of me, and I got to be honest with you, I think God puts a side in us to where we want to live, we want to enjoy this life. He made us that way, because otherwise, you know, when things got bad, we'd all go out and kill ourselves. I mean, let's be honest, we like life. God made us that way, and I praise the Lord for it. I want to grow old. I want to have grandchildren. I want my children to grow up. I want them to graduate from college. I want all that, just like they want all that. You know, I like that thought. It's wonderful. But then there's a side of me also that looks around at this old world, and I think, my goodness, what am I holding out for? I see some of you nodding your heads. You know exactly where I'm coming from. And, you know, I don't want to be disappointed. I don't know how God's going to pull this off, but he's going to pull it off some way. You know, he's going to make it where we're not going to be disappointed. He's going to make it where there's not going to be any tears in heaven. I don't know how he's going to do all that stuff, but he's got it figured out. And it's not for me to worry about. It's just for me to be his. But I sit there and I see all that, and I come to the conclusion of two things. There are some people who hear the, and they're like me, they're a little troubled, but at the same time, they glorify the Lord and they're ready. They're spiritually ready. And I'm ready today. I want you to know I'm ready that if he comes back today, I'm ready. But then there's other people I meet, and they don't want to talk about it. They make fun of it. Matter of fact, I talked to one guy about it this week, and he said, yeah, the Mayan calendar ran out last year too. And I thought, well, that's as far as that went. He didn't want to hear about it. And one thing that these people have in common is they don't want to hear about it because they're not ready. I mean, there's a difference between saying, well, I don't want to miss out on some things, but nevertheless, He's God and I glorify Him and I'm ready. He's master of my entire soul. He's master of my life. He's master of everything that I am. So if He comes back now, I'm ready. Even though there's things I would prefer, or I think I would, I'm ready. I'm ready because I have no doubt. I have enough faith in Him that no matter what waits on the other side, it's going to be better than what I got right now. I have that kind of faith. And that's still different than this, I don't want Him to come because I'm afraid of what He's going to find. And I'm afraid because I don't want to meet Him and I'm not ready to meet Him. Which camp are you in today? Anyone can fool you once, can't they? But nobody can fool God. And when we think we can fool God, we're only fooling ourselves. The people in high regard in Jerusalem had a good thing going. Now they were troubled because they didn't want to be found out. Maybe you've been serving in the church and you know something's wrong in your heart and you're afraid, you've been in a leadership position and you feel as though, hey, listen, I'm not much different than Herod here. Maybe you're, maintaining a respectability in the church, but your Christian life is all talk and you know that you've been a fake for some time. But it's really more than that. It's not just about being found out, which is enough. But Herod had power, and I'm sure others around him did too. And I remember people, I sit there and I read this, and it makes me think of other people that I know. I remember one time I was pastoring, and it was our first church, and God had kind of moved in a special way, and some new families came. And I'll never forget, we had a board meeting one day, and a trustee looked up at me, and he said, I'm going to tell you something right now. We got too many people coming too fast to this church, and we need to do something about it. I said, I'm sorry if I misunderstood what you just said, but I thought that was the whole point of what we were trying to do here. He was concerned because we had one new family, and a guy was singing in the choir, and he brought his kids to choir practice, and they're kids, for crying out loud. They're kids. And this one trustee had been really, and I mean, he was a marvelous man, great worker in the church. And he'd been in the choir for some time. He was quite a leader. But he wanted me to let that family know what was what and how they were supposed to behave whenever they came to the church, or he wasn't going to sing in the choir anymore. He don't go to that church anymore anyway. He left after I did. But anyhow, I mean, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, what kind of thought is that? I remember when God moved at Gold Hill and some things were going very well. I had a number of people come up to me and they said, Pastor, I just hope we don't get too big. I thought, are you kidding me? I thought there's churches everywhere in this county that would love to have just 10 more people. But if you get too big, you lose that intimacy. You're just not as close. I'm like, what? I thought, if God could bring them, don't you think He's got something prepared for us to be able to minister to them? People get troubled when they think they are losing influence. And that's really what it was all about. It wasn't that new people were coming, it's just that the new people who came didn't recognize who was really in charge. Didn't recognize the way it was supposed to be done around here. People get troubled when they think they're losing influence. Look at Jerusalem. The establishment was afraid because when Messiah came, nobody would need them anymore. The Bible tells us Jesus came to His own, but they did not receive Him. Talking about the Jews of His day. Listen to me. The church, which is His own of the day, still gets troubled at times when Jesus comes in the form of the Holy Spirit because in that form He takes over. And sometimes Jesus takes over in such a powerful way in the presence of the Holy Spirit, it's frightening. And we say, hey, we got to get this under control. I don't know. This worship's getting out of hand. Or listen, I don't know what's going on. There's a little bit, it's a little frightening to me because, in the good old days, I remember when everything was A, B, and C, and now it looks like God's taking things out of control. Herod wanted things under control. His cabinet wanted things under control. Let's just quench this Jesus right now. And sometimes I'm afraid we do in the church too. If we're not careful, we become the Herods of our day. We squelch that spirit. We push out the ones who come to hear about Christ because we have an agenda. I said a couple weeks ago, I think one reason why we haven't grown as a church is because God hasn't prepared our hearts in a way to where we're ready to be there, anxious to serve. Because if new people come and they have a lot of children, or if new people come and, are we prepared to take them in? Are we prepared to minister to them? Are we prepared to serve in our church? Are we, do we have a servant's heart? I mean, some of you feel as though, you want the church to grow a great deal, but do you have a heart that where it might be reliant upon you to have to step out and serve a little more right now? I don't know. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying it's something that we have to ask ourselves. If God brings more people, are we prepared to handle them? Do we have servants' hearts like that? It's so sad because Jesus came to give of Himself. When I look at this, and Jesus was coming to Jerusalem to give of Himself. He gave of His time. He gave His very life. And He wants to make people great in His kingdom. And He says the way to do that is for us to serve. That's the way to make us great in His kingdom. But the strange thing is that so many of us prefer greatness in this kingdom or the appearance of greatness. I'm curious, if Jesus came to Unity Church and revealed what our hearts were really like, how many of us would just prefer to silence Him? What would He discover about us? What troubles you about His return today? Think about it this way, and it came to pass that when Jesus came to Unity, the pastor was troubled and the Wesleyan church with him. See, a pastor has to be willing to let the Lord take the reins. I sit down, I try to write sermons, I try to do the best I can. I try to talk to the Lord and see what He would have me to say. I know Pastor Forbus and Pastor John are that way. It's all His church. I've got to be willing to surrender who I am to Him. Are you, as a lay person, willing to do that too? Wise men sought Him, they found Him, and they gave to Him. Herod tried to kill Him, stop Him, and silence Him. The truth's coming to town. It's coming. Are you ready? Or are you troubled? Would you stand with me?